300 years ago, Sir Thomas More invented the word utopia, where everything was going to be hunky-dory. But now we know it's going to be a green-powered Earth, and that'll be solartopia.
Was there an Adam?
Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit the apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. We're back at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. That was the wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns and the Rivertown Kids from their Grammy-winning album, Tomorrow's Children. I'm Harvey Wasserman talking to you from the sunny, well, it's not so sunny actually, it's kind of rainy and gray here in Southern California on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. And we have a great show for you today. Two spectacular guests. Oberon Zell is with us, my co-author on the Solartopia books of the Mayan prophecies in 2012. Oberon, you with us?
Yes, I am, Harv. I'm glad to be here.
Great, great, great. And Michael Short, a truly spectacular entrepreneur, technological genius, pioneer in the world of webcasting and all sorts of media technologies. Michael Short, are you with us?
I'm here.
Okay. Let's start with Michael. Right. Michael, you co-produced or produced one of the most amazing events I've ever attended on Saturday. I actually was honored with the slot of introducing Jack Canfield, whose Chicken Soup of the Soul has sold to something like 500 million vegans all over the world. And just an amazing four-hour production that went to, well, you tell us, Michael, how many people did this go to, this production?
Well, on that day, we had estimates that we exceeded 10 million viewers, and the day before, we had estimates that we had exceeded 20 million viewers, and basically, those come from the aggregation of not just the event that you went to, but there were over 40 live events that took place related to the solstice around the world.
And what was the theme? What was the basic reason for these events? And over on Zell, I know you had an event or two that you were involved with, too, in California. But, Michael, you had an incredible array of Barbara Marks Hubbard, Marianne Williamson, some incredible performers and speakers. But what was the message of this amazing event?
Well, it was very interesting. What happened was there was a several separate groups, and the group that Barbara Marks is associated with is called the Shift Network, and they have been working towards an event called Birth 2012 for months and putting a great deal of effort into it. Obviously, it was just a beautiful scenario, and that theme was about the coming birth after the solstice of a new era, a new age of enlightenment, and they really did a really good job. And they called me and said, you know, you are kind of an expert in doing global broadcasting, especially webcasting, so can you help us? There was another group who had a main theme of the Mayan message, and they had events in Guatemala, down in Chichen Itza, and other sacred Mayan sites with the Mayan elders. And they called me and said, can you help us with this broadcast? You know, we really want to do this and pull all this together. We were doing our own broadcast at the time, and we wanted to bring a well-rounded picture because we have people who are looking into the solartopia idea, free energy, a sustainable green future. And they were hoping that this would be a transitionary period at this solstice. And there was another group that was into the idea that if they synchronized the message, the prayers, the ohms, the meditations, that they would help bring a new vibrational level into this new age. And they called and asked me, can you help me? And so about a week and a half ago, I said, hey, let's just all do this as one giant global broadcast, make history, tie all the events together. And so that's what we did. We tried to bring a well-rounded view of every aspect of what segments of humanity were looking for. And almost all of it was a hope for this better future, this Solartopia.
Now, this came out, this primarily came out of the Agape Theater. That seemed to be the hub in Culver City, Los Angeles, California. And the events, like I said, included Jack Canfield, Barbara Marks Hubbard, Marianne Williamson. Tell us some of the other people who were involved and what their role was in promoting this new world consciousness.
Well, I think the head of that was the founder of the Shift Network, Stephen Dynan, and he brought that together. It was Barbara Marks Hubbard's vision of this Birth 2012, and the two of them came together and brought many others in. There was also a similar facility in the Bay Area, up near San Francisco, and they had feeds coming in from. They had this beautiful high-definition feed from Stonehenge of a druid ceremony at the solstice at Stonehenge. And they had some various other events going on. And then further north in America's Vancouver, up in Washington, is where my facility is. And so at the last minute, what we did is tied all three facilities together so that everybody could see all the events coming in from everywhere around the world and involve them in, if they choose, in their local production, like the one you attended. But also we involve them in each other's webcasts, and that's how we made this presentation to the world.
So now people who want to see this now, where can they go to look at what happened during the end of the Mayan calendar there? What's the website for that? I'm sure they'll we'll have it posted at PRN. FM. So where is the webcast website they can go?
Well, I'm sure that there'll be I'll give you a few websites. Our website is still broadcasting 24/7, and we're still actually, believe it or not, we're still receiving very wonderful footage from events that took place places like Guatemala, where they just don't have internet access. So they're making their way home, and then they're uploading the footage of the ceremonies and things to us. So that's www.peaceday.tv. And the Shift Network is birth2012.com. There's another organization that is unify.org. And all of these websites are being transformed to bring you replays and provide libraries of the information. And there's two documentary films I know of that now I'm working on of what exactly did happen on the solstice.
Okay, well, go ahead.
I say, I know what didn't happen. The world didn't end.
Well, actually, the world did end. The world as we knew it ended, and something new was reborn. Michael Short, spectacular. I want to just say very briefly, I had the amazing honor to introduce Jack Canfield at the event at the Agape Theater in L.A., and you told me how many people were watching at that moment. Can you tell our viewers, how many people, listeners, how many people were actually watching this webcast?
We got word at that point that we had just exceeded 10 million viewers.
10 million viewers. That's unbelievable. Spectacular. Fantastic. Stay with us, Michael. You're going to be with us the whole hour, I hope. We're also
sure.
Here with Oberon Zell. We will be joined, by the way, at the half hour by Stephanie Spear. She's in Florida right now, but from Cleveland. And we're going to add in the dimension of the Solartopian energy transformation that's so much a part of the end of this phase of the Mayan calendar. But Oberon, you're my co-author on our book on prophecy. What were you doing when the world ended?
Well, this world ending thing is such a strange thing. It's like, you know, what was I doing when, at midnight when the day ended? I mean, ending is, there's no ending on a circle. It's a cycle. It's, you know, and it goes around and around. So you could just as easily say, what were we doing when the world began? But the age that we had been in was over, was ending. So we'll go with that. And what we did here locally was we had a big ceremony.
Where is locally for you?
I'm sorry. I'm in Sonoma County, California. I'm in Sonoma County, California. We're about 40 miles north of San Francisco, where we are here, and we have a nice local group called the Sonoma County Pagan Network, and we had about 70 or 80 people at our gathering. We had a big feast and a spectacular ceremony that Morning Glory, my beloved life mate, and I had created and conducted with a number of participants all around the turning of the wheel. We did a ritual drama based on Dylan's song Shelter from the Storm that was really beautiful, and a visioning of Gaia's awakening. And that was a large part of our theme, was the awakening of Gaia at this time as we turn into the age of Aquarius. So we didn't really have any ending kind of stuff. It was all new beginning and about awakening after, you know, eons of sleep, slumber and darkness and all kinds of stuff. And it was very nice. And then we...
Did I interrupt someone there? Tell us a bit about this, Oberon. What is the content of the new awakening? How is this this new phase of the Mayan calendar? You so beautifully explained it to me one day. It says, yes, you said the calendar is ending, the era, the epoch is ending, and when that happens, we take down the old calendar and we put up a new one. So,
that's kind of the way it works, isn't it? I mean, every year, we get to do this. Calendars are one of these things that come up and go down again. I don't understand why people think there's only one calendar, and then when it ends, when the calendar comes to an end, instead of just taking it down off the wall, you have to burn the house down. But that's not what we usually do. We usually just take down the calendar and put up a new one. But the neat thing is, each time you put up a new calendar, you've chosen what's going to be there, what kind of calendar it's going to be. It might be, dragons or sports cars or beautiful babes or whatever it's going to be. And you put that up, and all the dates are in there, and all that kind of stuff. And as the year goes on, you can fill in some of the dates, but the basic one is set. But at the end of the year, when you take down the old calendar, you get to choose the new one that you put up. And you can choose what you're going to put on it. You're going to choose what you want to commemorate and what you want to honor. And that's the position we're in right now, because we're in a number of calendars, of course. We have the annual calendar that goes up and down every year, and we have the calendar of the Aeon, which is about 2,100 and 60 years. That's a zodiacal age. And so the age of Pisces calendar is coming down, or has come down now, and we're getting to pick the age of Aquarius calendar to put up and what we want to have see in that. But more than that, we have also the calendar of the long cycle, the Mayans called the long year cycle, which goes for 26,000 years, or 25,920 to be precise. And that's the precessional cycle of the Earth's rotation around, as it kind of describes a big circle in the sky, the North Pole, around the constellation of Draco. Right now, it's positioned at Polaris, the pole star, but over 26,000 years, it describes a huge circle in the sky. And every 26,000 years, this whole big cycle moves in such a way that the winter solstice sunrise happens to align with the galactic equator, right about the center of the galaxy, which is right between Sagittarius and Scorpio, if you look for it in the sky. And that is the starting point of the whole cycle that the Mayans noted. And that's really neat, because we have, every time we have a cycle of a calendar or a clock, we have a starting point. On our daily clock, we use midnight as our starting point. And on our annual calendar, well, in the West, we use January 1st, but traditionally, winter solstice, or December 21st or so, has been the end of the year and the beginning of the new year. And in different other cultures, different calendars have their own New Year's, the Chinese New Year, the Jewish New Year, all these different ones. And that's all fine. The Mayan calendar hinged upon a really nice astronomical point, which is the galactic equator. So when the sun whereas winter solstice happens to occur on the galactic equator, you have completed a cycle. Well, the last time this happened, 26,000 years ago, was in the Stone Age, and it was a time we call the creative explosion. When suddenly, with very little preliminary fanfare, there was a proliferation of cave art and sculptures of little goddesses and shamanism and music and pottery and all kinds of stuff just exploded. It was a renaissance of human culture that had never been known before. And that was the last time we entered into the age of Aquarius. And now,
wow,
26,000 years later, we've gone through all of the 12 signs of the zodiac, the signs of the zodiac simply being arbitrary names for the marking of the entire cycle, circle of 360 degrees into 12 equal parts of 30 degrees each. And that's really what it's about, just like we mark a clock face in 12 hours of 60 minutes each and so on. And it's just a simple geometry thing. It really doesn't have anything beyond that. But what happens is that we are human beings, and we, our unique feature is that we live in story. We are creatures of story. We create stories about everything. Everything we do, everything we exist, everything we believe is stories. And we can't help shaping ourselves. Yeah.
Well, Oman, you and I wrote a story. Can you tell people about this book? And then I want to talk to Michael Short a bit about his story. And
sure.
We want to get to the content of this transition. But you and I wrote a book. Can you tell
yes.
us about it?
Well, we wrote a book called Prophecies and the End of the World as We Know It, or I like to think as They Know It, and Apocalypse or Solartopia. And that's really kind of what it's about. This is again, it's about the story. Some people have had a story that the world comes to an end and there's great destruction and apocalypse and it's all over and their story is done. And that's fine. That's their story and it's over now. But there's also those of us like yourself with the Solartopia vision and many science fiction authors and visionaries who have a story that gives us a future and takes us into a better world that can, in which the ills that have beset us over the previous times can be addressed and corrected. And one of the best examples I can think of this is what happened in 1966. Because in 1960, George Pal made a movie of H.G. Wells' book, The Time Machine. And in the year 1966, the time traveler stops the machine. You can read the date on the chronometer on the dashboard. And there's a nuclear global holocaust that destroys the world. And he slams the time machine into fast forward and comes out 10,000 years later to the rest of the story. But in 1960, 6 years down the road did not seem at all unlikely or unreasonable to imagine a global nuclear holocaust. And that was the end of the story. Virtually every vision of the future at that time presumed a global nuclear holocaust. And the only future would be slugging it out with the mutants and the radioactive ruins. And that was going to be it. But what happened instead in 1966 is the world changed dramatically. Because a future was introduced. That fall, a new TV series premiered called Star Trek. And it envisioned a future in which we get it together and we achieve harmony among the nations and we set out into the universe to explore strange new worlds and meet new civilizations and boldly go where no one has gone before and all that good stuff. And suddenly, out of a time when there was nothing written, there was no future written at that point, Gene Roddenberry came up and gave us a new future. And that's where we are right now. We're in a time when...
Michael Short, that's fantastic, Oberon. I heard you give that talk at Starwood, and it's a brilliant vision. Michael Short, you are the grandson of one of the world's great inventors, and you yourself are an incredible... your resume is staggering in terms of your technological advances. And does this resonate with you? I mean, have you introduced the world here to a new Star Trek with this global festival that you webcast so effectively?
Well, to be honest with you, that was my intention. I'd like to add a little bit to what Oberon has been saying about
it. For our listeners, I want to clarify, Michael, I have met you, and you do not have pointy ears.
I have them surgically fixed.
So tell us what your vision, how your vision is playing out here.
Well, really quick, I want to embellish a little bit on what Oberon was saying, because I spoke with many scientists and archaeologists about the Mayan calendar to come up to speed prior to the production. And I found out, of course, the long count calendar you referred to is divided up into 13 major sections called baktuns, and we just came to, we are now in the 14th or the zero, whatever you want to say. And what the Mayans did, at the end of each baktun, they would sit back and they would look at their culture and they would analyze it and they would say, you know, this living in the city thing is not sustainable because we need, the agriculture isn't working for us, so we're going to abandon the cities. We're going to go out and disperse into, so we could do sustainable agriculture. Or at the end of the next baktun, they might get together and say, no, let's build this fantastic monument or whatever. So this is a time for reflection on, you know, and it's also the end of all of the other calendars miraculously coinciding. So none of us look at this as the end of anything. We look at this as a beginning, and what I wanted to do is, I know for a fact, not just because my great-grandfather, who I'm writing a screenplay that begins with his life, he was the best friend of Alexander Graham Bell. He was a contemporary and close friend of Nikola Tesla. He was funded by Westinghouse like the rest of them. I mean, the whole story is, you know, it's got a very interesting beginning. But it goes through time when I was a youngster going to college. I was working in a major auto manufacturer, and we had cars. This was in the early 70s. We had cars that were getting 75 miles per gallon and better back then. And we were told why they would never be on the production line and what to say if anyone found out and everything. And so I've been sort of keeping in tune with what we really can do from a technical point of view, and what we're doing as a planet, not just as a country. And right now, I can tell you honestly, we should be living in a George Jetson society. Our science and technology is 50, 60, 70 years ahead of where we are and how we're working on the Earth. And the Earth, we have to realize it is a living organism. When we use fertilizers that aren't any good and upset the phosphorus and the nitrogen balance, it gets into the water, that starts to kill the coral, that starts to affect the oceans, and they don't sink carbon as well. That affects global warming. Everything is one big cyclical thing. We need to make people aware of that. We need to make people aware that if they adopt this non-tribal, I'm going to nuke you, this is my property, it's not yours, that was the past era. If we can get past that, then we can use these new technologies to create this new utopia, this solartopia, this new you know, respect for the Earth and respect for each other. And that's what we need. That's what we wanted to do. We wanted to spark that. And everybody that worked on this, dozens and dozens of people and producers and film crews, and none of us are going home. The solstice is over. We want to continue to create a conscious network, a really conscious content, continue with the message, continue to reveal the truths about technology, reveal the truths about spirituality, reveal the truths about how we are treating the Earth, and how the monetary system we live is incredibly enslaving. It's downright evil if you look at what it's doing to most of the planet, who lives on $2 a day, and children are starving. Even in America, about a quarter of the children they're undernourished because they're impoverished. It's not right. And so it's a mindset.
Your vision, Michael, would end that. You know, the Solartopian vision is a green-powered Earth with everyone having the right to vote, everyone fully fed, everyone having access to whatever medicine they need, and
right.
Of course the empowerment of women, all organic agriculture, and justice prevails, and of course ultimately the end of war and the beginning of a true peaceful planet. That's the Solartopian vision, and
absolutely.
I think I did a great job of putting it out there. And Oberon Zell, let me just quickly mention we're on with Oberon Zell. my co-author on a book on prophecy, which has just turned the corner here, and the great Michael Short, who has just produced one of the most astonishing globally webcast events that you can imagine on Saturday, the 22nd, at the turn of the Mayan calendar. This is the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Wasserman. We're joined after the break at the half hour by with Stephanie Spear on the renewables. Oberon, quickly, if you'll give me a website for where the book is at and tell us a little more, I'll expand on what Michael has said here. It's a beautiful vision from you two guys. I'm really in awe.
Well, I think we all hold the same kind of vision, and this was a major part of what we were trying to work with here. In my particular part of it, I was putting out the idea all over the world to everybody, and I sent this to the SIFT network and everyone else, that at dawn of Saturday morning, everybody should be going out and greeting the rising sun as it moves around the world by singing the song Aquarius from Hair. And if we could have everybody doing that in a kind of a coordinated global visioning, it would be an amazing focalizer for this vision. The book on prophecies is available on the Mythic Images website, which is www.mythicimages.com, and look under the books, and it's right there with other stuff, because I've got quite a few other books up there, and I'd hope lots of people will read it and get the whole vision, because we put a lot of good stuff into there, Harvey. We
yes,
did.
Michael Short, your website real quickly before the break.
It's peaceday.tv. Very simple.
Well, that's easy. Peace, peacedaytv.
Yes, we began doing these global broadcasts for the United Nations International Day of Peace, which is every September 21st. And that's how we sort of gained the knowledge and ability and built the facility to do all this. This past year, we've gained enough content and enough, quality messaging to go 24/7, not just one day a year. And that's our goal. We don't want peace one day a year, which that's what it was originally set up to do. We want peace every day.
Yeah, we had a global day of peace. I remember that. Mm-hmm. That was a very interesting exercise. I thought it was very effective and certainly worthwhile to do. We're on with Michael Short and Oberon Zell. You're welcome to call at 888-874-4888. We're going to shortly take a break. This is the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show, and we are talking here the day after the end of the world as we knew it. But we're now starting a new world, a new calendar, a new chapter, and certainly a new astrological and astronomical lineup. Oberon, what do you think of the Mayan calendar here? How accurate has it proven to be?
Well, it's an ingenious calendar. It's very complex. It's a lot more complex than the one that we use, because the Mayans did not use the 12 system like we are so used to using. They based their countings on a complex interrelationships of tens and twenties and sevens, and the calendar uses multiples of all these and throws in 13 as a crucial thing. And it's a very very intricate calendar, and it was obviously meant to be used primarily by the priesthood and not for ordinary people to understand, but it seems to be remarkably accurate, and the nice thing about it is that it corresponds nonetheless in the overall long cycle. It still comes together at this moment, and all of the calendars do. That's what's really fascinating. The Western calendar of the that is based on 12 astrological signs works with the Mayan calendar of the 13 Bhaktans. At this time, they all coincide. This is sort of the year of the jackpot, or the moment of the jackpot. Heinlein wrote a story about that one time, where all the cycles all click together at the same point. And this is that point, in fact. So it's really quite exciting, I think. I think we really are at the dawn of a whole new age, and I hope that everybody can appreciate that as the year moves on and as the ages move on and we get further into Aquarius. That vision should take precedence over the Piscean vision that we've been living under for so long. And my main thing is, all these people who are the end of the worlders, I want to be able to say to them, hey, you guys are still here? What the hell? You're supposed to be out of here.
The end of the world did end, actually, in many ways. I mean, the point is that we're trying to end a certain kind of thinking and jump into another one. Isn't that part of the message?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, I was very enthusiastic. We had people who contacted me, like Foster and Kimberly Gamble, who have been working to the same exact vision that we have, and they did the movie Thrive, which they brought down to Chichen Itza and sent me some pieces. But they were talking about, for instance, free energy devices that they have been working with. I also got contacted by Dr. Stephen Greer, who has a disclosure project, and that includes free energy. And enough information got out to enough people that you can't go backwards. You can't say, no, I'm going back to the Piscean concept. This is Aquarius. Too many people know now, and so you have a choice. You can make this happen, which you will, or you can close your eyes and pretend that you're back in the old era and just ignore it. And I know people of both ilk, but we've let the cat out of the bag, so to speak.
Okay, we're gonna take a short break here. Dana Lyons, the great Dana Lyons of Cows with Guns fame, is gonna sing us his version, the Rocky Top version of the Solartopia song. And we will come back. Stephanie Spear will join us, and we're gonna remember that the Solartopian age is built on the end of King Kong. Coal, oil, nukes, and gas will be disappearing from the planetary use, and we're gonna switch to totally renewable energy, solar, wind, tidal, geothermal, ocean thermal, all that good stuff. We're gonna have totally organic agriculture, and along with social justice, universal hand-counted paper ballots for our democratic system, and the empowerment of women, and the end of war, and the beginning of a true global peace. So as we take this break with Dana Lyons there, we will be back in a couple of minutes. We're at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We're with Oberon Zell and Michael Short. I hope both of you guys can stay with us for the second part of the hour.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Okay, great.
All right.
Ago, Sir Thomas More invented the word utopia, where everything was going to be hunky-dory. But now we know it's going to be a green-powered Earth, and that'll be Solartopia.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over
the night? Hi there. We are back.
All right.
We are back with Solartopia, the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. This is Harvey Wasserman. We are with Oberon Zell and Michael Short, two great geniuses of the new Solartopian age, talking after the end of the world as we knew it here with the Mayan prophecies and the turning of the Mayan calendar. Are we good?
Yep.
Michael, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
And Oberon?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, very good, very good. So we've been listening to Pete Seeger and their crew singing the Soiltopia song. That song actually won a Grammy as part of the Tomorrow's Children CD from Apple Seed Records, I think it is, Apple Seed Music. We should be joined shortly by Stephanie Spears. Stephanie, are you on the line?
I'm here, yes.
Oh, yes. All right. So we have a goddess with us here, a true goddess. I've known Stephanie for years and years, and she is the great green goddess of renewable energy in the Great Lakes system. Stephanie, we've been talking with Michael Short, one of the great genius producers of a truly astounding webcast that occurred on Saturday, and he's got a tremendous resume of global communications, and Oberon Zell, my co-conspirator on a book on prophecy. And what you are... Oberon actually coined the phrase neo-pagan and has quite a wonderful community he's involved with in Northern California. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes. What I'd like you to do is tell us, please, what is happening in the great green revolution, the great solartopian revolution in energy. You are a true pioneer, vanguard activist and entrepreneur in the world of renewable energy. Tell us, please, how the world is transforming to get us into a solartopian energy system.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Harvey. Can you hear me okay?
I can, yes.
So I feel that the most exciting aspects of renewable energy are the on-site distributed generation projects that are happening all over the world. It's quite exciting to read about individuals who want to generate their own power, their own green power. And I find that the most vital aspect of our world starting to rely on cleaner, renewable energy. Of course, we have industrial projects. As you may know, the Obama administration just gave several million dollars to offshore wind projects. Actually, the offshore wind project off of Lake Erie in Cleveland received $4 million through the Department of Energy. So,
this is a big project, Stephanie, that will revamp much of the Midwest's energy in a truly Gaian, solartopian, New Age way, an Aquarian way. In that, we have two nuclear plants in Ohio on the Great Lakes, a number of others around the Great Lakes, and this project will put windmills in the middle of the lakes and start to get our energy in a way that our Mother Earth might actually like. Is that correct?
Well, it doesn't happen as quickly as that, I don't believe. The wind project off of Lake Erie is only probably going to be 5 wind turbines about 3 to 5 miles from the shore of Cleveland. Unfortunately, we don't seem to be, at least in the United States, set to rely on renewable energy. Instead, we keep feeding the fossil fuel industry through subsidies, incentives, tax breaks, and instead of supporting the renewable energy industry and making market certainties that would increase investment in that area, we tend to keep feeding the fossil fuel industry. But
well, Stephanie, you edit a spectacular website called EcoWatch, and I have picked up articles off of EcoWatch, right, which I posted at a website called nukefree.org. It shows that one country in this world is actually really booming ahead with renewables.
Yeah, there's lots of countries.
That would be Germany.
Germany, Morocco, even Saudi Arabia are making great steps toward generating a percentage of their electricity through renewables. So we live in a country in the U.S. that doesn't even have a federal energy policy. So we don't have any mandate on the federal level that says by 2030 that 20% of the electricity generated in our country will come from renewables. So, but other countries have great leaders and have made great strides towards setting what we call renewable electricity standards, like an RES or an RPS, our very typical acronym, renewable portfolio standard or renewable electricity standard. So in the U.S., we greatly need to pass the policies that will help ignite the renewable energy industry.
Well, and you've been a big part of that. And, you know, Michael Stewart, you're with us here. Your great-grandfather was a part of the birth of the electric power industry. Can you talk a little bit about that? And also, you mentioned that he was a friend. We got some interference there.
Yeah,
he was a friend of Nikola Tesla. How did this kind of electricity, electric production, play into a new solartopian age? As by the way, I mentioned Stephanie Spear not only edits EcoWatch and does advocacy work, but she actually does installations of solar and wind and has a business doing that, expedited renewable energy, which is really impressive. And so she's not just talking the talk here; she's walking the walk as well. Michael, your great grandfather did that. I'm sure you're involved. Tell us a bit about renewable electricity. From your family tree point of view?
Well, they were working, of course, Tesla actually was working on a wireless transmission of energy, and he knew some things that are still to this day classified top secret. But the funder of my great-grandfather and Tesla and others was Westinghouse, who owned copper mines, and he worked in collusion with the government way back then because he said, let's push the electricity through copper wires so that I can make some more money, and so we can put meters on them so the government can make money, and that was the birth of what we call our grid system. Now, in renewables, I live on the shore of Columbia River, right on the gorge, which is one of the more windiest places in the United States, and we have this beautiful, beautiful wind farm that every time the wind picks up, they have to turn the darn thing off because the grid can't handle the extra electricity. And we have the Bonneville Dam here, so with its water and its wind creating more electricity than the grid can handle, and yet we pay exorbitant prices because it's like OPEC. The electricity goes out onto a national grid system, and then everyone has to buy it back locally. We have to, we definitely have to get a policy that Stephanie is right. We have to be able to put things in place where we have local production of electricity and local consumption of it, and then we don't have a middleman. We don't have a grid. We don't have to turn it off when there's too much of a good thing like a windy day. So we need to get back to looking at the truth about not just the technology behind it, but the politics behind it and the money behind it. That's what's holding it up.
Yes, and I got to say, you know, Stephanie's website, EcoWatch, I pulled an article up there. What they're finding in Germany, of all places, is the renewable boom. You know, they decided in Germany to shut down their nuclear plants. They've shut 8 of 22 at this point, I believe, or 9. And everybody predicted a year ago that in Germany, price of electricity would skyrocket and there'd be shortages. And actually, it's the opposite in both cases. The onset of renewables in Germany has driven prices way, way down, and they have a surplus of energy as a result of this transition. Oberonzel in Northern California, are you seeing solartopian energy come in?
Well, we've got a big wind farm out here that's quite spectacular. I can't give the exact location, but it's very impressive. And there's special dispensations given for solar installation. One of the big companies up here is Real Goods, which has a major emphasis on green energy and technologies and solar energy. My son was involved with that for some time, and he was the installer for Real Goods at a Ecotopian Solartopian kind of resort down in the Virgin Islands a number of years ago, that everything was designed that way to be alternative energies and solar powered and recycled stuff and all. But one of the things that I found the most exciting about this, nobody ever seems to mention much, which is the hydrogen element. In 1966, Roger Billings pioneered the hydrogen energy internal combustion engine movement by converting his father's Model T. Ford into a hydrogen-powered vehicle. And for decades, the public transportations in a number of Mormon cities, like Provo, Utah, for example, have run on hydrogen with big signs on the side of them saying hydrogen-powered vehicle. And what he did was he got away from the gas aspect of hydrogen, which is very explosive and flammable and dangerous, and developed a hydride system, which is, you know, like a kind of a powdered iron hydrides. And that worked really well. And his vision was that he wanted to have the entire country so that everybody had hydrogen-powered cars. You would just simply plug them in to your house current overnight, and that would hydrolyze the water that would be tapped from your tap, and the next day you'd be fully charged and off to go. Because hydrogen and oxygen is all it takes, and the byproduct is water. You know.
Yeah, we like that, and it's clean water too. Stephanie Spear.
Yeah.
The windows that you're installing in northern Ohio, and you're in the heartland here. Although right now you're talking to us from Florida. But how are these solartopian new age technologies moving ahead in the Midwest despite the lack of support from the government?
Yeah, well, they're moving along. I'm finding solar energy projects are tending to be a better return on investment in my region, primarily due to the value of the solar renewable energy credits. But, you know, still available on the federal level is an incentive, a tax credit. In Ohio, we lost our state incentive, which has significantly diminished the amount of projects being installed in the state. But, you know, I want to go back to something that I heard you all talk about before the break, and that's really the need for a paradigm shift. Because if, you know, the world didn't end, but we're now living a new world, there's no doubt that we need a significant paradigm shift that reduces consumerism. You know, we just posted a piece on EcoWatch from Vandana Shiva that talks about the importance of biodiversity and ecocentrism and how we desperately need to really understand the value of nature. And through energy efficiency and installation of on-site renewable energy projects and supporting our local economy, growing our own food or supporting our local agricultural system, we can really make that shift in consciousness and better human health and the environment.
I totally agree.
Let me throw in real quickly, Abram. The revolution that's occurring in Germany on green energy, which was, you know, what happened in Germany was that there's a very strong Green Party, Green Movement, very well organized, inspired in part, by the way, by a book written by a great friend of ours who just passed away, Ecotopia, Ernest Kallenbach, which was, he was a great guy, and his Ecotopia, of course, helped inspire Solartopia. But they ran an Ecotopia in Germany. It formed a Green Party. And having won the program to shut down the nuclear plants and to switch to renewables, they're finding that not only are the renewables coming in ahead of schedule and under budget, and producing more energy than planned more cheaply, but they're also decentralizing control of the economy. And these networks of windmills and solar panels and stuff like that is actually cutting around and underneath the corporate structure, which is exactly what, you know, King Kong, coal, nukes and gas and the corporations have been afraid of. And yet here we see it happening almost automatically in Germany. It's an amazing thing. Obrand, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, well, that's really been the whole issue all along. It's been the centralization versus the decentralization. I mean, that was sort of what was the basis of the conflict between, you know, Tesla and Morgan and Edison and all the rest of the thing about that. The unfortunate thing is that the way corporation structures are set up, it is legally the foundational requirement in the raison d'etre for corporations is to make money for the stockholders. So, you know, unless the thing is designed to make a small number of people rich, it's not going to get implemented. It's not going to get used. It's going to get suppressed or are sabotaged even. Roger Billings had his laboratories and offices burned and destroyed. He had his experimental cars driven off the road by mysterious vehicles. And it's just, it's a terrible thing. And these are the choices that we make. You know, how are we going to go forward in order to really get this, the paradigm shift, which I totally am on with that. I've been promoting for over 40 years the whole Gaia thesis as the foundational new paradigm, that we have to recognize that we are part of a vast living organism in whose body we are mere cells in the entire living biosphere.
And, Michael Short, you have a career, your great-grandfather had a career with Nikola Tesla and Energy, and you've had a career in communications, kind of skirting the corporate structure. Can you tell, the two great technological innovations I see in this new world, great, brave new world, or I shouldn't use that phrase, green new world, in energy and in communications. And if anything has certainly changed the world, it's the internet. You, Michael, have pioneered ways around corporate control in global communications. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, I spent 35 years of my life building the world's most awesome propaganda machine without knowing that's what I was doing and how it was going to be used. And when I looked, I mean, I worked for all the major telecommunications companies one way, in one aspect or another. I built a lot of television and radio systems. But now I look at how amazingly abused they are in terms of getting messages out or suppressing messages. And so I vowed to spend the rest of my life getting around them and got into the internet. I own a media-based cloud that I've been building for 11 years now. And eventually the goal is to be able to access this media cloud without having even to go to the internet. But right now that's what we have. And this latest broadcast was quite a success, and I totally agree. As I look at everything, we have a corporate culture, and you could talk about offshoring jobs, you could talk about anything, and it comes down to the same thing. The corporations have an obligation to make money for the shareholders, and unless we have a paradigm shift, I'll paraphrase so many people who participated in the broadcast. They said, look at the pharmaceutical industry right now. Its job is to keep you on drugs, not cure you. Look at the educational system. Its job is to dumb you down and teach you certain things, not to inform you and set you free. Look at the monetary system and the banking system. It's not there to make you wealthy. It's there to make money off of you. And the list goes on and on and on. But it means the whole world is upside down. That paradigm shift is absolutely bizarre if you stop and think about it.
Michael, given what you've been doing, we now have, and you've shown this actually fittingly enough on Saturday, that you did this whole thing without, you reached 10 million people minimum without a corporate structure. And that's a big deal, right?
Exactly. We are actually a nonprofit organization. We did this on our own. We had a lot of volunteers, people who believed that this paradigm shift needs to take place. And we're not encumbered by having to make a profit. We're not encumbered by having to go to advertisers. We went to advertisers for the solstice in terms of sponsorships and underwriters and said, we do this, we're nonprofit, we do this show. And everyone said, you're not going to have an audience. It's just a solstice. I mean, nobody gives a damn. And yet we reached 20, 30 million people totally with a budget of like $61. So it was...
Wow. That's the equivalent of a very, very big wind farm. Way to go.
Yeah, that's incredible. That is just amazing.
Stephanie, you were about to jump in, I believe. Stephanie Spear from EagleWatch.
Beside the fact that corporations have to turn a profit for their shareholders, our corporations also own our politicians. And with the passage of Citizens United allowing corporations to be seen as people and donate an undisclosed amount of money for people's candidacy, even makes the whole issue even more complicated and more upside down.
Right, and so it's really money that's and corporate money that's been blocking. It's the giant blood clot
that's been blocking the rebirth or the birth of a new era here. O'Brien, you don't take corporate money up there in Northern California for your neo-pagan work, do you?
No, but boy, I wish we could get more donations from the people who should be supporting us. It's been one of those odd things that we've never really understood is this, the pagan movement is huge, millions of people, and we're all about the right kind of thinking and the right paradigms and the stuff that everybody should be completely supporting, but somehow the financial support just isn't there, and everybody has always been running on a shoestring. We really don't know why that is the case, because I really think that a new religious paradigm is crucial to this, and that of Gaia, though that is the living earth, is the core of all of this, and the pagan movement is what that's about, you know, it's the whole thing.
Well, the good news is I think we're about to turn a corner on that. I mean, Stephanie, you are in the business of renewables, and it's starting to appear that wind and solar and all these sort of pie-in-the-sky technologies are actually can be very profitable.
Well, they, of course, can be very profitable, but the biggest issue in the United States is the lack of market certainty. When you don't have market certainty, people are not going to invest. And so because we're not passing the policies on the federal level to really make the renewable energy industry what it can be, we're just not getting the type of projects developed that we could. You know, Obama has the all-the-above energy strategy, which I'm not a huge fan of. You know, we really need to see renewables as something that can work. It does work. We do need to invest money into our national electrical grid system, and we also need to support these distributed generation on-site projects.
And I think that's going to happen tremendously. Stephanie, you've been building these things, and I know windmills are a nightmare to get in place, but solar panels are a bit easier, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. With zoning and all the other issues that come along with wind, what I say, wind has many more hurdles you have to jump over to get the project done.
We are jumping, and we're doing an amazing thing here. We're getting very close, dangerously close to the end of the show. This has been spectacular talking to the three of you. I do want to say next week I'll be talking with Don Wirtschafter, another pioneer in the field of marijuana and hemp. There is another major change of the world here with this drug, this herb that's been illegal, which we've known about for 6,000 years. Talk about money and politics coming together. O'Brien, you're in an area that's going to boom with marijuana, I'm sure. Even Ohio will have its day with hemp and pot. It's a great breakthrough with the legalization. We'll be talking about that next week. In the meantime, Stephanie Spiritz of EcoWatch.org. O'Brien, tell us your website again, please.
Well, my personal one that I recommend for people to check out is OberonZell at Ning.com. So that's my Ning site. That's my social networking site. So please go there and check it out.
And Michael Short, we're going to end with you. You've been spectacular. You're a great grandson of one of the true pioneers and yourself an incredible media genius. Tell us where we can see the webcast that you did.
You'll be able to see highlights and even new footage at peaceday.tv. And if you want to read about the nonprofit, that production company, it's called All Things Peace. So allthingspeace.org is where you could go and find more information. And also, I'm sure you can view the footage there as well.
Wonderful. It's been an honor to have all three of you talking about this this wonderful new world that's been born here. The Mayan calendar did its job. It was the end of the world as we knew it. And Stephanie Spear bringing us in the Green Power Earth, O'Brien Zell with the new pagan movement, Michael Short with your wonderful new media powers. It's been an honor to be with you. And next week, as I say, we'll be joined by Don Wirtschafter, one of the great pioneers of the legal marijuana and hemp industry. Thank you, Matt, and the crew at WPRN for getting us up this time on the Internet. And we will be back next week with another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I am Harvey Wasserman, and we'll see you then.